Plan Well, Enjoy Life is presented by G. Pollock Financial in Bend. Send us your questions now. Email us at planwell@gpollockfinancial.com or call us at 541-480-1661. Discussions on this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research, Inc., a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Securities offered through registered representatives of Cambridge Investment Research, Inc., a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor. G. Pollock Financial and Cambridge are not affiliated.
All right, welcome. Thank you for joining us. I'm Greg Pollock with G. Pollock Financial. You are listening to Plan Well, Enjoy Life, a 30-minute program designed to bring some rational thought to an increasingly irrational economic landscape. Let's talk about what happened with the markets this last week. Last week was not too pretty. The Dow finished at 17,675, down 1%. The S&P was at 2,071, down 1.12. The NASDAQ down to 4,800, down 1.9%. Russell 2000 was down over 1.6%. The developed markets, primarily with Europe, were down 2.76%. And that is like a 5% drop in the last couple of weeks, mainly due to this Brexit vote, which happened this week. And then we had the emerging markets, which were down 2.05%, which now kind of erased most of the last couple of weeks there. In terms of sector plays, every sector was down except for telecoms and utilities, as well as energy, which was flat. In terms of the bond market, bonds were slightly positive. The aggregate bonds were up 0.05%. Corporate bonds were actually down 0.18%. Municipals were up about 0.5%. High yields were up about over 0.75%. Two-year treasury is now at 0.7%, down from 0.73%. 10-year treasury at 1.62%, down from 1.64%. 30-year treasury at 2.43%, down from 2.44%. So for the most part, portfolios were down across the board last week. In terms of commodities, oil still around $48 per barrel. Natural gas jumped again to $2.58. We've got a little shortage going on in California. Gold was back up a bit to $12.91 per ounce. Silver was up a little to $17.37. And even copper was back up a little bit to $45.22. Now, just please remember, these are indices. They cannot be invested into directly, and actual investment results may vary. Also, please remember, past performance is not indicative of future results. Just because something fared well last week doesn't mean it will do the same this next week. Now, in terms of data, we had a lot of data points coming out this week. We had a red book number showing same-store sales were up by 0.9%. We prefer to see this over 1%. It's been under 1% for about 6 weeks straight, but at least it's growing. It's more than we can say about a lot of other areas. We had the FHFA House Price Index. After several strong readings from the housing sector, this rose less than expected by 0.2% for the lowest reading since April of last year. But after a strong March, March's numbers were rised upward for 0.8%. So that's not all bad, just a little sluggish. Existing home sales showed some strength with sales up 1.8% in May, which, while not on fire, is pretty good. And then, of course, we also had the new home sales. This actually fell by 6% for the month, but the annual rate is still strong. We also saw some price concessions from builders dragging down part of this. So we've got some areas that are still so strength, some areas that are softening a little bit, but overall they're strength. Petroleum status report showed that crude inventories fell by 900,000 barrels, but we still had builds in both gasoline and distillates. And from a big picture standpoint, just to keep this in perspective, year on year, crude oil inventories are still about 15% higher than they were a year ago. Gasoline is up 8.8% and distillates up 12.5%. So we haven't really taken down the inventory much. And that likely won't happen until we see economic activity pick up again. Okay, other numbers we had the jobless claims number, both initial and continuing claims were strong, trending downward. That's welcome news. We had the Chicago Fed National Activity Index. This was negative, coming in at minus 0.51, showing that May was a fairly weak month. We had the PMI Manufacturing Index flat. This showed slight growth at 51.4, and we did see some acceleration in new orders, backlog orders, production, and employment. Maybe. Just maybe we're starting to see some improvements there. Consumer comfort report index actually jumped a bit to 44.2, suggesting the consumer's feeling a little better about the economy, at least for this small window of time. We had the leading indicators number. This was also slightly negative for the month, coming in at minus 0.2%. So this is a report not giving us much either way in terms of economic activity. So this could influence the Fed at the next meeting. We'll see. We had the Kansas City Fed Manufacturing Index. This came in actually at positive, at plus 2 for June, after negative numbers since I think all the way back to January of last year. Much of this has to do with the recent rebound in oil. And the big news this week, of course, was the Brexit referendum. And on Thursday, the UK decided if it wants to remain a part of the European Union or become the first ever sovereign state to leave the group. As of the time I'm taping this, we're still waiting for the final results, but I believe the remain vote is ahead of the leave vote. The markets would much prefer a remain vote than a leave vote, whether that's actually better for Britain or not. I don't think anybody really cares. We just don't want it to hurt our portfolios. And that's the big news and what we're going to be watching for. But keep in mind, regardless of how this vote came out, this wasn't binding on Parliament. Even if they decided to leave, it was going to be like at least a 2-year window before this happened. You'd have to renegotiate all these treaties. It's just the markets don't like uncertainty. I don't know that this would have been the disaster that some were predicting, but it did create uncertainty. And that's the scary thing for a lot with the market. So that's kind of what's happening. But it's important to differentiate between the initial short-term reaction when it comes to these things and a more considered response once the dust has died down. And that's really kind of the name of the game. So we're now about 3 weeks away, 4 weeks away from the next Federal Reserve meeting. We're going to wait for the labor report to come out there. So even if we have a relief rally here, it may be short-lived. We've got to watch. A lot of these issues are still out there. Now, when we come back, we're actually going to be joined by local attorney Paul Heatherman, where we're going to continue our conversation regarding some of the legal gotchas that might come up, particularly when dealing with landlord-tenant issues. For those who remember the Comfort Cat scenario from a few weeks ago, this is going to be a follow-up on that, and so this should be a good one. Please stay with us. All right, welcome back. This is Greg Pollack with G. Pollack Financial. You're listening to Plan Well, Enjoy Life, a 30-minute program designed to bring some rational thought to an increasingly irrational economic landscape. Today, we're being joined once again by local attorney Paul Heatherman. Just a reminder about Paul. He's a graduate of Willamette Law School, where he was editor of the Law Review. He's been in private practice for about 20 years, and he has become a regular contributor to the show for some time now. Today, Paul and I are going to revisit some of the topics we discussed a few months ago, namely around some legal gotchas that folks might run into, particularly surrounding landlord-tenant law. So, Paul, welcome back. Thanks for coming.
Thanks, Greg. Good to be here.
All right. So, Paul, I still remember us talking about the case of the Comfort Cat.
Yes.
And the nightmare that ensued for this particular landlord. And it seemed to expose some government regulations that, while seeking to protect the rights of tenants, they are often at the expense, both literally and figuratively, of the landlord. So what other areas are there which folks need to be aware of?
Well, real quick review, the Comfort Cat had to do with the animal that the prospective tenant requested come with her into this new rental dwelling.
Right.
The landlord actually said, yes, but you got to pay me a deposit, where most landlords would say no. He just wanted the $300 deposit. And for that, she, you know, filed suit and, you know, filed a claim under federal law. And
right. The
damages were quite large. He, you know, knew to certainly be aware of, say, a guide animal or a service dog.
Yeah.
But never thought of a comfort cat as being something akin to, you know, the ADA or some type of a accommodation requirement for a tenant. And so now he knows. And so we all should know that a comfort cat is in that class of protected people to be concerned about when you think about renting your unit. And along those lines, we also have familial status. Can't discriminate, you know, to rent based on the status of your, whether you're married or single, et cetera.
Whether you have children or not,
or kids.
Obviously that can impact
yeah.
the property. So it's almost like, you know, my wife's in recruiting. She's been in HR-related functions for over 20 years. And there's a lot of questions you can't ask in an interview for a
right.
job. It sounds very similar from a landlord-tenant standpoint.
Right. It's similar to the hiring practices. You know, when you screen for tenants in a prospective apartment or house, it seems similar types of, you know, cautionary steps to take as a landlord.
Okay. So, let me ask you this. So, first of all, and this is more of a rhetorical question, what does this say about our society when certain human beings are not a protected class, but a comfort cat is? We'll leave that out there and let people debate that, okay? But from what I can tell, look, we've got a shortage of available rental properties here in Central Oregon.
Right.
That is unlikely to go away anytime soon. Do you see the potential for regulations like these to exacerbate the situation? Namely, folks are going to be less likely to rent out their properties.
I think that will be the long-term effect if this continues. And, you know, we also have, you were speaking about legal gotchas, and we also have, you know, state law gotchas. Mm-hmm. And moreover, lately, city law gotchas, because in Portland, they've been adding their own ordinances to the landlord-tenant, you know, scenario where, for example, you have to give extended time before you give a rent increase. And those are outside of the state laws, but they're in addition to.
Right. They can always add to them. They just can't retract from them as long as they're meeting the minimum, the federal and the state. You can layer on. Now, what about in Bend?
I mean, rumors that the council is going to take that up. So it's, you know, we really need to stay on top of what additional, quote unquote, protections are going to be given to tenants in terms of notice, you know, rent increases, notice to vacate, et cetera.
Well, you know, look, you know me, you know I'm one of the most apolitical people out there. I get disgusted with both sides of this, but I do find it funny that we couldn't pass the gas tax, we can't fix all the potholes in the road, yet we spent how many millions of dollars on this bridge waterfall thing that isn't working?
Right.
That's some good prioritization right there. All right, so, I mean, look, this is a little scary. I mean, at some point, so in terms of discriminatory type issues, we can't discriminate. You talked about familial ties, the family. We can't discriminate against comfort cats, any sort of service animal.
Right.
What if it's a non-service animal? Is that fair game to deny someone because the owner doesn't want that animal in the house?
That still applies, yes, as long as it's not related to some type of disability.
Okay, but the comfort cat is one of those. Well, I guess if there's some documentation from a doctor.
Yeah, apparently the woman was depressed, and so the doctor signed off a note saying the comfort cat would be of assistance to her condition. You know, I have a cat, and you know, I get depressed sometimes.
Right. Well, as I was going to say, I mean, I'll bring it up again. You know, I know when I'm not happy, I like to pet something warm and fuzzy.
But I don't have a doctor's note.
Right. I don't have a doctor's note for that. So, but maybe I'm being short-sighted there. Maybe that would help me. But of course, mine's an 80-pound lab who thinks he's a 10-pound lap dog, and it's more painful than anything else, but he's pretty awesome. So, all right. So, this is interesting stuff. Now, are there any other areas? Now, what about things, you know?
Well, I will say this. It's just real quick. It's related to what we just talked about is if you're going to rent a, an apartment or a house to a person with a physical disability, like, for example, a wheelchair, then if you let them rent, you must provide the accommodation. So you're going to have to build that ramp. So if a rental house doesn't have the ramp and you rent it out, they're not paying for the ramp. You're paying for it.
Interesting. Well, here's the question now. So a disabled person may not look to rent a particular that doesn't have handicap access and in favor of finding one that does. But with such a shortage, there may not be something out there. If you as a landlord know that if you're going to have to cover these things and someone comes and applies, do you basically have to say yes and build all this stuff? Or do you still have a right to say, can't rent it to you because I can't afford to put these things into the property?
If they're otherwise qualified, you're going to have to rent it to them. Now, if there's some other reason why they don't qualify, for example, bad credit, some legitimate grounds, then you can deny them and turn them away. Okay. But if you're going to turn them away because of the wheelchair, then you're going to get in trouble.
And obviously the financial ability of the landlord to cover these expenses is apparently not a consideration.
Well, you know, the code that requires the type of ramp and the slopage and, you know, the length and all that. I mean, that could take out 6 months of rent right there.
Absolutely. If you're lucky. And assuming you've only raised your rent recently. All right, Paul, this is good stuff. But scary at the same time. Now, I just want to remind everyone, please don't use this show as the basis for any legal or tax-related decisions. Please consult with your attorney and or CPA instead. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Paul Heatherman. We're going to see what we as citizens of the United States can do in a regulatory environment that no longer resembles the United States. So please stay with us. All right, welcome back. This is Greg Pollack with Chief Pollack Financial. You're listening to Plan Well, Enjoy Life, a 30-minute program designed to bring some rational thought to an increasingly irrational economic landscape. Today, we've been talking with local attorney and bane of those with comfort cats, Paul Heatherman. We've been revisiting our discussion surrounding the potential legal pitfalls for the unwary, particularly in the realm of landlords and tenants. All right. So, Paul, a lot of this doesn't seem to be just Oregon, but federal law under the Federal Fair Housing Act. And discrimination based on race, religion, color, national origin, sex or gender, disability, or family status. These are all protected under federal law. Does Oregon seem to, and you've sort of alluded to this a little bit, does Oregon seem to take it further than other states are doing, or is this sort of par for the course?
I'm sure it depends on the state, but yeah, Oregon is taking it further, definitely, with regard to, giving more, again, they'll call it protections for the tenant, with regard to eviction or accommodations and habitability requirements, et cetera.
Okay. So here's my follow-up question now.
I will say, though, in California, it'll take you about 6 months to evict a tenant, even in the best of cases. So, if you want to take the California comparison, Oregon's actually fairly, you can get, a tenant out without much ado, depending on the manner in which they defend.
As long as they receive the right notice and it's the right reason.
You go through the right procedures, you probably get about in a couple of months.
Okay, that's a third of the time,
right,
compared to California. So sadly, that's not surprising. But So my question is this: all right, at what point does the landlord have the ability to protect against their own disability? For example, let's say a landlord is severely allergic to dogs or cats. The landlord arguably would have a right to keep their own property free of debilitating allergens. Would protection against a landlord's own disability be sufficient to someone who comes with a service animal? Or you have to do it no matter what and just suck it up and deal with it because your disability isn't as bad as the other ones with a comfort cat?
Well, you have two competing concerns there. And
right.
The statute is specifically protecting, a tenant, by definition.
It's in favor of protecting, because that is the weaker party traditionally in the negotiation.
And that's what the statute calls for. So there's no language that says, or that provides an exception for the owner who himself or herself has some type of a susceptible allergy.
So a note from the doctor that you have severe allergies and can't even enter your own property if it's had a cat in there isn't going to be sufficient to say someone who's depressed but likes to pet their cat and has a note from the doctor?
Well, there is some language that talks about, by doing this, if you are posing a direct threat
right
to the health or safety of other individuals, or if it causes substantial physical damage to others or to the property of others. So there may be some further analysis there and a possible angle.
But it's not going to be a blanket. It can't be just because it's a cat. You've got to show that this is a severe danger health-wise or to the property.
You're going to have battle of the doctors, I guess.
Right, or the contractors in terms of damage to the property.
Yes.
Okay, so all right. That's good. Paul, thank you for coming on the show. This gets scarier and scarier as we go through these things, but fortunately we have people like you out there at the forefront.
Keeping the radar on
and probably, taking the brunt of this in a lot of ways and probably underappreciated by your clients for the battles that you're fighting. Just remember, having Paul on the show, it's no way meant to be an endorsement of Paul or any particular attorney, but if you would like more information about Paul, you can reach him at 541-389-1010, or you can go to his website at www.bendattorneys.com. And look, I know we are overdue to take a question. I think we're going to need to do that today. This is a question that came in a couple of weeks ago from Brian here in Bend, who asked, I keep hearing about concerns about the UK leaving the Eurozone, but what about Greece? Is that still something we need to worry about? And look, Brian, this is a very insightful question. Yes, I fear this is something we need to worry about, but the question is when? Recently, there was a bunch of policymakers in Europe. They were scrambling to get a deal done to ease Greece's debt burden. Now they're getting more relief, but there's nothing major before 2018, and only if they continue with some likely painful reforms, although I think they'll get about 7.5 billion euros by the end of June. So why do this? Well, because we're nearing a vote by the UK on whether to stay in the European Union. And you see, the last time it was Grexit for Greece. Now it's Brexit for Britain. I have to say they went with Brexit because it sounds better than UKEXIT for United Kingdom. So they're trying to avoid a flare-up before the Brexit vote. But mark my words, the IMF has indicated that they don't think Greece can meet its budget goals. So I don't think this is a slam dunk by any means, and I suspect we're going to see more issues with Greece, whether that's later this year, 2017, or 2018. So that's where things stand with Greece at the moment. There's been a temporary Band-Aid for the sake of keeping the noise down ahead of the Brexit vote. So, Brian, thank you for the question. And for those out there listening, please keep sending them in. I can't always get to them, but we have gotten some good ones. You can send questions by emailing us at planwell@gpollockfinancial.com, or you can call us at 541-480-1661. And if you have missed part of this or any past episodes, please go to my website at gpollockfinancial.com and click on the tab called Radio Show. All right, next week, we're actually going to take a close look again at an integral part of the financial planning process, specifically the time horizon. This is a very critical piece to anyone's financial plan, but I believe there's parts of this where the forest has been lost from the trees, as it were. So we're going to take a closer look at this, how to use this more effectively for yourself in light of the greater models that are out there. This should be a good show. Please join us for that. I want to thank the folks at Horizon Broadcasting Group, as always, for making this show possible. Thanks to those of you who listened. It's most appreciated. This is Greg Pollock with Pollock Financial, urging you all to
plan well, enjoy life.
Plan Well, Enjoy Life is a presentation of G. Pollock Financial. Call Greg at 541-323-1008 and tune in next Sunday for another edition of Plan Well, Enjoy Life.